Welcome to the Engaged Core. I'm host and veteran teacher, Elena Hill. During each episode, I interview past students, peer teachers, and even a dance parent or two to put into perspective how vital teacher-student relationships are in a dancer's success. We all know dance is a complicated art form, literally and figuratively. The Engaged Core connects the dots for those who love the art form and want to make sense of it all. Guys, I am so excited to have Nicole Robinson here. Let me just tell you, okay, she might not know this, but she is absolutely my unofficial dance mentor, probably my official one. I just didn't ask her. I just assume that's the way it is. I'm going to give you her background bio, but I tell you, you're going to be amazed. So Nicole Robinson is a dancer, teacher, choreographer, and dance education advocate from Riverside, California. Nicole received her undergrad degree in kinesiology from California State University, San Bernardino, as well as a master's in dance education from California State University, Long Beach. Nicole is a strong advocate for providing dance education opportunities to underserved populations and is credited with establishing both the A.B. Miller Dance Program and Conservatory of Dance. She is a dance specialist for Fontana Unified School District and is the lead teacher for the FUSD Dance Collaborative. In 2015, Nicole was named California League of Teachers Teacher of the Year for Region 10 and was named the 2017 Carlston Family Foundation Teacher of the Year. In addition to her ongoing work at A.B. Miller, Nicole is past president of California Dance Education Association, as well as a committee member of NDEO's Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Access Committee. So that's the kind of stuff that you need to know, right? But then I'm going to tell you how I met her and why I love this lady. So I started teaching dance at Bullis School in 2010. And before that, I had done a bunch of teaching at studios. And so in my little under prepared brain, I was like, oh, it's going to be fine. I'm just going to teach the same class.
It's the same thing, right? It's the same thing.
Exactly. It's totally not the same thing. I was like, I walked in and I'm like, okay, yeah, so I'm grading you. They're like, I don't understand. I got this this bad grade, and you said my feet weren't pointed. I'm like, but they're not. I can't grade you on that. So
like, that means you have a bad grade. Don't put your feet in bed, right?
And just the expectations were so different. And so I went on to NDEO's, like, I think they had, there was a board. I don't know that they have these boards anymore. It was a teacher board.
They do have them, yeah.
They do still. Okay, I
didn't know. They still have them, but they're not as, you know, they're not as active, I think, partly because of just the internet. Like, you can just put your question out on Facebook. So, but yeah, they're still there, the message boards. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I got into this message board and I put out, I probably was a please help me, I'm drowning type of a situation. And Nicole was the first person to respond back. And number one, her response definitely made me feel like you can do this. You're good. I'm so glad you're asking. Let me tell you how I can help. Beyond that, she just offered like, hey, I can give you a call if you'd like. And I'm like, you'll call me? I mean, is this something people do? You don't know me at all. But she was like, absolutely. And then so I think it was, I don't know if it was that fall, but it was shortly after that. We finally got face to face.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I heard across a crowded room. It was like one of those, I think I heard my name and I was like, Nicole Robinson, who, by the way, I still call Nicole Brown for some odd reason.
We've still not established where that came from, because the only Nicole Brown that I know is the infamous O.J. Simpson's wife. God rest her soul.
Right. And by the way, this is not her. So
No, it is not.
You're the opposite of that completely.
Yes.
Mainly because you're alive.
Completely.
So that would be an interesting interview.
I think you'd get a lot of listens on this podcast if you had brought back Nicole Brown from the dead.
I would be the most famous podcaster ever. I'm going to stop going down. This feels very dark, this conversation.
It does.
But I'll just say, like, I literally, like, I fell so in love with her from that just moment. We spent a lot of time during that convention just kind of getting to know each other. And it just was like match made in heaven. Like, I'm like, this absolutely has to be my mentor. And so I'm so excited for you guys to get to meet her and hear from her. So I don't know that I've asked you this story, but I would love to know, and maybe our listeners want to know as well. Can you tell me why you became a dance teacher? It's clear that it's something that you were born with.
It's so funny that you asked that question, because it's just this morning, my husband and I have these really like deep philosophical conversations in the early morning, sometimes on the weekend. And we were having this conversation about like, when you thought about yourself as a kid, like, how did you see your adult life? And, you know, what did you think? And I said to him this morning, actually, I was like, you know, honestly, like, I don't ever think I like fixed on a thing like a house and this type of job, but more, I just always had the sensibility that I was going to be successful, like at whatever I chose to do. Like, I had that sensibility. And what I did know, you know, in late, probably elementary school, going to middle school and high school, is that I always had this ability to like lead people and teach people. And then what kind of happened from that time period of about 11 years old until adulthood is I just always found myself in jobs where I was teaching or helping people. Like, I, you know, that just always seemed to be the thing that I did. Even when I worked at like Blockbuster Video, I immediately got moved from just being like the scanner ringer upper person that I was then, you know, helping locate, find like lost videos and doing, you know, there was just always this element of like management or like assisting people or even just like teaching people. And so this job at A.B. Miller just sort of appeared one day. I had been in college. I had done cheerleading all growing up, had dabbled a little bit in dance and, but really it basically like become like a competitive cheerleader for the most part. I was on a college team. We were highly competitive and lots of like state and national recognition. And, but I always dabbled in dance, went to college, majored in kinesiology, physical education, switched out a bunch of my PE classes for dance classes because I did not want to do archery. So I was like, how do I get out of this? Oh, I know what I'll do. I'll go to the department chair of kinesiology and go, I don't want to do this. Can I do this instead? And amazingly, he was like, yeah, you can. And so when I finished in college, a professor called me and she said, hey, there's this random school that is looking for someone who has a PE degree, can coach the cheerleaders and can teach dance. And I went, what? So I went over, you know, I literally just graduated, like finished school in June, and she contacted me in September about this job. So I said, you know, I'm going to go over and check it out because I really wasn't quite sure what I was going to do. I thought, well, maybe I'll play around a little bit in dance. Maybe I'll keep doing, I was working for a cheerleading and dance company. So I was like, maybe I'll just take on a larger role with them. I didn't know, and I'll sub. I don't know what I'm going to do. So I went over to A.B. Miller and walked around. It was a relatively new school. I think at that time it was only probably about 3 years old. And they just loved me. They were like, we would like to hire you. I was like, wait a minute. I don't even have a credential. Like I just took the state test to like teach like last week. I didn't even take it seriously. Like I just did it to do it. And they said, well, we really want you. Can you call us back after you get the results of what's called the CBEST in California? Which is like a basic skills test for teachers. And, the results came back. I had passed, which I was, again, I just took the test to take it so I could sub. So I called them back and I said, well, I passed the test. They were like, great. When can you start?
Nice.
Wait, what? And, that is how I ended up being an official, like credentialed teacher. But I have to be really honest, like, my whole like teenage years up into adulthood, it was all jobs where I was like teaching or leading people in some way. So it didn't feel unnatural at all. Obviously, because I had not ever taught in a public school, I didn't have a credential. I'd never been to a teacher prep program. It was panic time. But my personality was just like, I once I got hired for the job, I felt like I had a responsibility. And so in that responsibility, I knew that I didn't feel like I had enough dance training to be somebody's teacher. I mean, I was skilled. I could do things, Right. But I mean, like the pedagogy of it. And I think that's something that happens a lot in dance. People think that if you're talented, then you should be able to teach. And in my, you know, 25 years of teaching, I've run across some really dreadful teachers who are great technicians. But I knew that I had the technical skills, but I was like, you don't have the pedagogical knowledge to do this. So then at that point, I was 23 years old. I just fully invested on how can I just be a better teacher? Like, what do I need to know about this? And again, I have to be honest, like, I think those skills were in me innately. Like, I love doing it, but my goal was to be like a master teacher at some point, that like I could mentor people, like that would be eventually my goal. So how do I get the skills to do that? So that's kind of the crazy story. Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, it's a crazy story, but it's also interesting that you say that, because I think you, like, you clearly have moved into that role either way, because even prior to, I don't know how much you were mentoring teachers when I connected with you, like, which was like, I guess, 2013 or so. But like, people are drawn to you for that, because you are clearly giving more, given skills and pushing, You pushed me in a way, like, without even doing it. Like, I always think of you as like this really, like, you know your stuff. And beyond that, you absolutely love what you do. And as a result, like, if there's ever a concern or question, I just go to you, and you're not even in my district. I'm in Maryland. You're in California.
Right.
It's interesting. Right. And not interesting, because that's kind of how life works. If you, like, in your head, that's how you, what you saw of yourself, it's not surprising that that's where you went with it. And what I also love about your story is going, I knew that this is what I wanted to do, so I started to do the things that I needed to do in order to get there, which absolutely.
And I feel like I feel like also too, in coming, I mean, in the backstory of that, coming into Fontana, Fontana's a working class community, has always been a working class community. So I was dealing with students who didn't have access to dance as we know it. And I'm not going to say, because I want to hesitate, because everybody's got access to dance. Like, you dance culturally within your own families. Dance exists, but, you know, they didn't have access to dance in terms of, you know, ballet or modern, or just thinking about dance in a way globally. Like, what does dance look like in this country? Like, being able to just see dance as a valued content area, right? That's not what my students' experience was. So then coming into that, I can't come into an environment where they don't have access to something and then give it to them halfway. That was immediately kind of my thought process. I thought, it's not just going to be just good enough that they get a little bit of it. It needs to be, what's good enough is them getting everything that everybody else has access to, regardless of if they can pay for it or not. Like, that was kind of my thought process coming in. And I thought, any failings on my part shortchanges these kids, right?
Exactly.
You know, because they don't have access to studios, or parents can't afford to drive you down the street or around the corner to go take dance lessons. And even if they do, that might be very short-lived based on the financial place that our family is in right now. So yeah, you can take lessons now, but when dad loses his job, you cannot do that. So how can I, you know, create this environment that gives them more than what they need? Right.
Exactly.
So that was kind of the other part of it too, I think. And that made me feel like, you don't know enough to do that job well. So what is it that you need to do? And for me, that was taking classes on my own. That was applying to get a master's degree in dance education. It was just all of those things. It was being a part of the California Arts Project, where I could learn about how I could deepen my own practice and pedagogy. It was just about doing all of those things. But I was also doing those things because I love teaching, right? It's hard to ask somebody to prescribe that to somebody who don't like teaching. Okay, girl, I need you to go do this. Or, hey, man, go do this. But if you don't like teaching, you're not going to want to do those things. There's no desire. But for me, it was just this constant, like, do I know everything that I need to know? What else do I need to know? How else can I invest, right? You know?
I love that. Oh my gosh. I love that. That was awesome. I think we're done. I don't think we're
That's it. Podcast over. See you later.
That's so great. Today we're doing a student teacher thing at the, Y. So some of our, company, kids I'll say kids, teens, are basically going to be working with younger kids and kind of just being like mentors for them, but also dance teachers and kind of taking what they know. And most of them have danced most of their lives, or specifically in hip hop, and try to create this, create a space of like teaching, getting them in that space to do that. And so I almost had this exact conversation about responsibility. And when you're in front of people, you have to think that it's more than that. It can't just be, oh, I just want to show them my choreography. It has to be like a complete commitment to it. And ultimately you have to say to yourselves, if I don't know how to do this, how can I get myself ready to do it? Because they deserve that. So it's like hearing you say that is almost, it just, even, and they get that even and, that young, you know?
And I think also to the idea, and I want to push back, I think, on something that, you know, because I started teaching in 1995 and the discipline of education and teaching has changed a lot, you know, the way that we do things, but there still is this sensibility or this energy that the teacher is the sage on the stage, all knowing, and is telling the students what they should know. And I am pushing back on that and saying that when you enter into a classroom or a studio, that is a community, and that I stand before you with a sense of vulnerability that I do not know all of the things. And as we journey together, I'm going to learn a lot of things, you're going to learn a lot of things, but we're going to do this together. And there might be some places where I might make a mistake and you might find, oh, Mrs. Robinson, this thing happened. I mean, just yesterday in class, something, I did something I thought was totally accurate. And then one of the students was like, no, you missed a thing, but was not afraid to say, Mrs. Robinson, you made a mistake here, because I've created an environment that's, we're all learning. And my response to that is, thank you for your sharp eyes. Thank you for picking up on that one thing. Or if I don't know how to pronounce this indigenous word and another student does, that they have no problem with in our time here right now, unmuting themselves, but, you know, later on raising their hand and saying, oh, Mrs. Robinson, you pronounced that koala, not koala, you know, whatever that is, but that's all part of being a teacher is also presenting that vulnerability that I do not know all the things. And, you know, and I have been experiencing this over the past, I would say, probably 2 or 3 years, starting to understand that my dance education did not include the people in which disciplines, my dance education did not include the information about the people's backs that we were standing on. Mm-hmm. So when I learned about jazz dance, I did not learn about the influence of the Harlem Renaissance and the Lindy Hop. And I didn't learn that the Lindy Hop came from the Charleston. And I didn't learn that the Charleston came from the Cakewalk, and that the Cakewalk came from the Pat and Juba. And oh my gosh, that's why there was all of this improvisation and individual style in the Lindy Hop. I didn't get any of those things. And that all of that came from the great migration from the South of African Americans moving up north and trying to find their place and build a culture for themselves because they had their culture taken away from them. And I saw that.
Exactly.
Because all I got was plie and jazz walk and chasse, right? But I did never find out whose backs were we standing on to do that chasse, right? And so that's been a big part of my journey this year, is also telling my students, hey, I'm learning about this thing with you, because I didn't learn this when I was in school. And they're with like, wow, you're okay with saying that. Absolutely. Because a teacher should never stop learning, right? You know, I don't think so.
Exactly. So, yeah. No, that they absolutely shouldn't. The jazz thing for sure. I remember, so I knew the background of like, you know, vernacular jazz, right? But
that was always a separate category for me. Right.
Exactly.
Did you learn it that way? I learned in vernacular jazz over here and classic jazz over here. And what I just told my students on Friday is, no, listen, the vernacular jazz isn't separate over there. Like that this was, and my student used the word, they're like, it was whitewashing. I was like, that's exactly what it is. It was. That's exactly what it was. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And the thing that's interesting about that to me is like, I think I'm likening this to myself as a dancer, but also just many of the dancers in my studio or, you know, outside, like, who are just, especially Black and brown dancers, who are just like, you know, feel uncomfortable going into a classroom because people, they haven't had ballet their entire lives. And, right, you know, and right. when you're defined, people are defining jazz by, I mean, you need to have all of these ballet, all this ballet terminology. And so you have this space of like, you don't belong in a classroom when it's like, okay, wait a minute. This was not, this is not about jazz. Jazz is not a ballet art form.
It was never defined in that way.
Exactly. Exactly. When we started to determine that ballet needed to have, or jazz needed to have some more ballet and technical terms included into it. What we forgot to do is say that, okay, number one, these are the people who created it. So we can't then now yes. create something that they can't do. They don't have, right, now you don't right. have the background to do what you created because of the fact that you don't have this European art form that we created. So it's just, it becomes a, you know, everything is around this golden ballet, you know, everything is around.
Right.
This
and it, yeah. Ballet. And that ballet sits in the center of all, you know, and when you, people are a little reluctant to say this now, but you know, years ago, I'll say years ago, last year, you know, ballet is the foundation of all dance forms. Yes. Say what?
Right.
Say what? I'm not so sure about that. I would like to push back against that because there are lots of dance forms that don't have anything to do with that. And they don't have technique. You know,
exactly.
It's crazy. Right. It's crazy.
And it's literally the opposite. For me, it's the opposite of most forms. I mean, you know, like when you think about jazz, how jazz is supposed to be, it's a plie, you know, like you're, you know, and I shouldn't say plie, you're bending your knees, you're low to the ground, you right. know, like it's individual. Right. It's, you know, all of the things that make jazz jazz are actually opposite of ballet. So to.
Right. Individual style. Let's just talk. Right. Let's just talk about that in itself. Let's just talk about individual style and being directly expressive. Those are two things you are not allowed to do in a ballet class.
Exactly. Right. Tap, not hip hop, not like realistically, right. yeah. I don't know many forms that are rooted in ballet. So that's just like this lie yeah. that we got to get around. And the other aspect of getting around that lie is, you know, like thinking about the people that were getting ushered out of ballet or like, you know, captain what they can do because either, you know, well, her feet aren't, you know, her feet
well,
aren't
yeah.
European standard they're not, enough.
They're, right, right. Or your legs aren't long enough or your thighs are too big or your butt's yeah, too big or whatever that things. Is. Right. I mean, and that, and then we see that, we saw that happen with jazz dance, right? I mean, I'm thinking about, just, you know, the, and again, not to take anything away from these people, but like the credit that somebody like Gus Giordano is given. Right.
Yes.
In terms of jazz dance, but not yep. seeing all of the backstory of that. Right. You know, so he writes a book, Anthology of American Jazz Dance. And then that all of a sudden, you know, turns jazz dance into this art form. Right. But I would push back on that and say, but there were people before 1975 that were yes. doing this thing. You know, we, you know, so. So how does that happen? And then how does, you know, and then how does jazz dance as a discipline gets moved forward with all of these white males, right? You know,
right,
I mean, when you
exactly.
think about jazz dance as a whole, it gets pushed forward by these white males. And that's not to say that, you know, people like Gus Giordano or Bob Fosse, that their work is incredible. It's not to say that. But again, we're standing on the backs of some other folks. So we've got to give credit where credit is due, right? And it's important for students to know that. Like, I think that, you know, and my students, you know, to their credit, you know, as we were having this conversation last week, they were like, thank you for making that clear for us so that when our generation moves into the dance world, we won't make these mistakes, right? And I'm like,
exactly.
absolutely, right? Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. It's that this is in a year of these conversations, right? It's been a year and a half of these conversations.
Exactly. And there, you know, like, I think about how, like, I'm so glad that your kids are getting that. And I've done the same thing, even though my studio is mainly hip hop studio, but we have that conversation all the time because hip hop is also having gone through a similar thing where, you know, in order to be the popular
person.
Well,
and without
hip-hop,
jazz music, we wouldn't have had hip hop. I mean, that relationship is like this. And when you look at the core components of jazz, jazz dance and you put them up against hip hop, it's identical.
It's my students get
so upset with me when we sit and we look at the core components of jazz dance. Thank you, James Roby, for that. Out of Bradford University for those incredible. If you don't know what those are, I want you to look those up. Core components of jazz dance, James Roby, incredible. Yes. But when you line those up and have your students watch a hip hop piece and have those core components, they go, they're the same. And I'm like, yes, they are.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's Robert Glasper is a great video on YouTube. I think that's called, what is it called? Jazz is the Mother of Hip Hop. And he goes through and takes all of these jazz samples and lets you hear them in hip hop music and just talks about the relationship between those two sounds, those two. It's incredible. And again, dancers need to know that information.
Right. Well, they're both rooted in soul. So that's the reality in the Black American experience too.
Right. They're rooted in soul. They're rooted as a response to a situation, right? Mm-hmm. A response to a way of being, a response to living conditions. They sit right next to each other and you can't have one without the other. Right.
Exactly.
You know, so when I feel like when the dance community poo-poos hip hop, that tells me immediately you don't know your history because you can't. If you accept jazz as a dance form, a Western dance form, then you have to accept hip hop because without one, the other one doesn't happen, right?
Exactly.
So many things to talk about.
Are you a teacher looking to build your own core of engaged students? Want inspiration for a new project or simply looking for a place to shoot the shimmy with people who get it? Join the discussion on our Facebook group where you can communicate with like-minded teachers dedicated to transformative dance education. A direct link plus more information on this episode can be found on our podcast website at theengagedcore.buzzsprout.com. Now back to the show.
I will tell you, when I started getting serious about dance, all that I defined myself by, because this is what I was defined by, was how much ballet have you had? And as a result, I felt like I don't belong here. I don't, even in a hip hop class, like I don't belong here. In a jazz class, I don't belong here. And I think having kids understand that actually that is a lie. That's a lie. Well, gives them the opportunity to go into class and have some agency and be like, able to say, look, what I'm doing is actually valid. And I belong in this classroom with everyone else. Right. And there,
yes, you know, yes, yes.
I'm so glad that we're at this space. We should have been here a really long time ago, but here we are.
No, here we are. I mean, and also this is the time to do like crazy things. I don't say crazy things. This is just time to do different things. Like we did something completely revolutionary this year. We replaced our ballet component with Pilates.
Yes.
And somebody might go, well, oh, what are you going to do? How are those kids going to get into college? They're going to be fine. But I teach dance in a working class community, and what an incredible way to give students a way for them to sustain themselves. That our students, mm-hmm. and our goal is that our students will graduate from high school and be three classes short plus a long-term internship with our community college of getting Pilates certified. What? Like,
nice.
And I say that should absolutely happen. And do you have to give up one to give up the other? No, that doesn't mean that they're not going to ever take ballet class. That's not saying that at all. But why is ballet more important than Pilates? Can Pilates strengthen the body in a way that, because, you know, that's what we say to people, you know, ballet trains your body and gets it strong. Well, I'm going to say, can Pilates do that? Because I think so. And let's just start doing, let's start revolutionizing things and redefining. Are there all kinds of disciplines that can make someone a dancer? I'm going to say yes. Because right now in the United States, we focus in on three, mostly two, you know, because some schools will give a little bit of love to jazz. But for the most part, you know, we're looking at modern and ballet. And I'm saying, but what about West African? What about training dancers to be Pilates certified so that when they're in between jobs, they can get paid $150 an hour to go give someone a private? Like, what the heck, right? What if we also trained dancers to be very strong educators? Because what, like 85, 90% of us end up teaching anyway? What if we had hip hop as part of the curriculum? What if we had tap? What if we had some indigenous dance forms? Doesn't that make students better human beings to have that kind of experience?
Exactly.
I I would say yes, right? I would say yes. And isn't that what our goal is, to make people better human beings, right? I think so.
Exactly.
I
think there's this conversation between tradition and traditionalism. And I, you know, there are teachers that will fight to the death. This is how we do stuff. This is how we do stuff. And as long as we continue to stay in the this is how we do stuff, then people are going to feel excluded. People are not, you know, there are going to be voices that are just not going to be valued.
Not heard. You know what I want to talk about right now? So you bring that up. I want to talk about, so we're in the middle of a pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. So this is the opportunity to do like crazy ambitious things because you're forced to do things a certain way, right? So I'm excited. I saw all these colleges last spring talking about, you know, these initiatives, how they were going to approach inclusion and diversity and access in different ways. And so I am looking forward to the audition season so I can see these people turn this on in. And you know what happened? Folks just took their little in-person auditions and they just shoved it into the little boxes on TV. You got to give kids numbers and have them online for 4 hours auditioning in their box. No. How? And this is so flat, right? Yeah. How do you really get to know somebody as a mover or a dancer by looking at them in a little box that's 2 inches by 2 inches or whatever? Maybe it's 3. You know, and you have all these kids on Zoom. I watched some of my students. We had an audition that started, you to check in at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. They asked to see your government ID because they wanted to make sure it was you. And I thought, at that moment, I thought, but even if I had someone else audition for me and I got in, let's say, you know, I had you audition for me and you know, they picked me thinking it was you. But when I got to school to take my first classes, I couldn't do anything. Wouldn't that just be revealed and I would fail the classes and drop out and we would just move on? Like, do you really need to see someone's government ID?
Exactly.
Then they've got the auditioners, or is that even a word? The auditionees, whatever, online from 2 o'clock in the afternoon until 6:15. And this is a Zoom audition.
Wow.
So here are the things that I'm thinking about as a teacher of color that mostly services students of color in a community with high poverty and that live in multi-generational households with lots of different people living together. Where do I go in my house where I can monopolize a space that's large enough to move and dance in for 4 hours and 15 minutes?
Exactly.
And did you consider that when you were writing that equity, inclusion, and access statement? Did you consider that statement that you wrote when you were setting up these auditions? Because
yes.
I don't think you did. I think you missed the mark there. And so someone would say, well, then how are we supposed to find out if the children can really dance? And I would say you can do that in a variety of ways.
Right.
You could perhaps let them show you what they do the best and have them send that to you. That's a
right,
novel
exactly.
idea, right?
Exactly.
You could say, we're not going to have auditions at all this year. We're just going to do an open door policy and you're going to come in and we're just going to kind of start assessing dancers as you sign up for our level 1 classes. What would happen?
Right.
What would happen? Right. Because
exactly.
if we really want to put it on the table, when you ask me what makes a good dancer, I don't say things like a well-appointed foot and turnout. I don't say that. The things that I usually say are first and foremost, are they interested and tenacious?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a high work ethic?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Are they willing to practice, rehearse, and revise?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Do they pay attention? Are they able to memorize and sequence? And if you put all that in a pot and you have all of those skills in a pot, I think you can train to be a dancer.
Exactly.
I think you can. And an appointed foot or a stretched hamstring, those are body systems that can be worked, right?
Exactly.
I can work on my flexibility. I can work on pointing my feet. I can get more power in my legs. Like, I can do all of those things. But we have this dance form that automatically assumes professional level talent. When you're still an emerging artist, when you're still a young artist, right? You're supposed to be almost professional grade at 17 years old getting into college. You should be close to a professional. What other your discipline asks you to do that.
Exactly. Well, let me tell you why this is that works for you too. And the reason, and this should blow some people's mind. It's because you actually love teaching. Right. And there are people who are lazy and don't want to do that. They would prefer, this kid is perfect. I don't have to do a whole lot of work. But realistically, that's not why we teach. And we're talking about kids. We're talking about youth. We're not talking about, do you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're not in the business of training and really educating and mentoring youth, you don't need to be auditioning them anyway. That shouldn't be your job, because realistically,
right.
at the end of the day, the only people that you're going to get that already have that stuff are people who somebody's already devoted a ton of time to and education to create.
And education too, right, absolutely. I had a student years ago who has gone on to be an incredible dancer, you know, started dancing in our westernized training at 15 years old, right? We had a partnership with a particular school. It was kind of a boarding school that was near us, and they were partnering us and providing artists. It was a great partnership. But part of what I think now in hindsight that they were doing was they were also kind of trying to recruit kids to come to this school of the arts. That was their goal. So I had this student who at the time I think was 16, and then he had been in the program and had participated with some of these artists, but his senior year, he had gotten very seasoned. And one of the folks there was like, and approached him and said, you know, you need to come out to our school because A.B. Miller is not going to be able to give you what you need anymore. And he was smart enough to say to this person that was recruiting him, but this is where I got this training. I was here last year. And you didn't see me, right? You know, so that, just going back to what you were saying, that investment, right? That somebody has invested in this child and now the child is worthy. So now that child now is able to move into these spaces. But I really do think that the true test of a teacher is, can you make something? Can you make something with another student that, and I don't know that a lot of people are, like you said, willing to do that. I remember my husband, who is not a dancer, we'd gone to see a show. It was great. Like, I was raving about the show. I'm like, it was really incredible. And he goes, I have to ask you a question. He goes, do you think these people are really good choreographers? Or he says, or do you think it's because they're setting work on really good dancers? And that question has given me pause, and that must have been 20 something years ago. And that question has given me pause every single time I go and watch a show. I'm always seeing it from the lens of, is this really good choreography, or are these really, really good dancers?
Right. Wow.
And it's interesting, you know, it's interesting, you know, because like you said, some people don't want to do the work. And so when you arrive at these like kind of high caliber, you know, these people that are high caliber choreographers, you know, you begin to wonder, like, what could I do if I were working with dancers at that level, right? You know, and that's not to discredit anybody who's working with a professional company. So if you're listening to this, please don't think that I'm saying that, but I think it lends itself to that conversation about doing the work. Are people in dance education willing to do the work to create an inclusive environment? Because that's really what it takes in order for you to get more people of color, more people that are on the margins of dance. You have to go into the places where those people are. And often those are places that a lot of people don't want to work because it's hard. It's hard.
Right.
These kids, they don't know anything about dance. They don't respect the art form. Yes, boo, that's your job. That's right. Your job, to come in and get them excited about yes. this art form that they don't know anything about, and to give skill in areas where I might not have skill. That's your job. And I feel like that really becomes the challenge for the dance community, is, are you willing to go? Are you willing right. to go into the community that doesn't have any resources, and it's going to be a fight for you to even get kids in dance classes? And I would say the vast majority of people in dance education, they don't want to do that. They don't want to go work in the hard places. And where I work is a hard place. Like, I'm in the middle of a hard season right now in my job. But I'm not willing to walk away, because I know if I'm not there, who else is going to come?
Exactly.
Who else wants to do that work? And a lot of people don't. you know? So I think that what you said is so great. It's just, people are lazy.
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot in there that I'm just even considering. This is one of the challenges that I have as, and I think about this from, I still work at Bullis School and we do a lot of different styles of dance, but my program that I run is specifically a hip hop studio. And part of here's the challenge, right? Like I want to make hip hop has to be accessible because look who it was created by. Like you can't make hip hop this exclusive, only people who have enough money to pay and enough money to do this can do it, because that's not how it was created. And it just, to be honest, silencing voices that created the art form is a problem for me. It will always be a problem for me. That's like, so, you know, I actually listening to this, I'm going like, you know, we have levels in our program. Maybe there are levels that need an audition, but honestly, why couldn't our program just be open? So, because if you think about the kids who are connected to hip hop, just some of them, and I was one of them. Like I learned hip hop in a social setting. I didn't learn hip hop at a studio, right? And most people do.
Like, well, that's how it was designed to be learned.
Exactly, right. So as a result, because it's not in a studio, there are people who, you're talking about people who weren't required to look exactly, first of all, that's not even a thing that hip hop is to look exactly like the person next to you. That's like the opposite.
No, it's not. Yeah.
So you almost have to change the metrics and you have to be willing to do the work. All of us, you know, there are definitely studios in this area and studios I've worked with. I've had that conversation too. I'm like, I just like, you know, I want to just work with these. I just want to have a chance to work with these kids who like whatever I give them, they're going to do and it's going to be great. And I'm like, but then I love to teach. And so as a result, it's this aspect of, I would prefer, and I say this to my kids all the time, I would prefer to teach somebody who wants to do it, has a passion for it, and is willing to work to do it, than somebody who has the passion, who has the talent, but not that stuff, right?
All day, every day for that. Yes. All day, every day for that. Yeah. And disclaimer, there is a portion of my program that is auditioned based, but I want to put the big butt in the room, but our audition procedures are about how many kids can we keep? And that's it's a different model. So it's a different model. So, cause some people, the audition is about who are we excluding? Who's not good enough to be here? And I have tried to flip that on end with my faculty, is we are looking for any little thing that we're like, yes, that's a workable space. And part of that is because our program is an extended day. So the kids have an 8-period day. They're going to school from 7:30 to 4:30. So it also takes a special type of person in terms of work ethic and commitment. And that's kind of what we're auditioning, is that work ethic, commitment, tenacity. But our audition is not about like necessarily skill set, like the things that we look at, memorization and sequencing, ability to change direction. Like these are real things. Like, are you able to change direction? Spatial awareness. Do you self-adjust when you are too close to somebody, or how well do you, and a big part of it is how well do you take instruction, like, and correction.
Right.
Because I feel like if you're somebody that can really adapt with corrections, I got you. You're good. Let's do this. Let's play.
Right.
And so then the process becomes about how many kids can we include? So often, you know, we may have like 25 kids audition and we may take 23 of them and maybe lose that 2 because their grades are funny. You know, like they haven't been able to maintain a 2.0 GPA and that's what our school requires. Or there's been some discipline or attendance issues. But even when we make that exclusion, we come back around to that student and tell them why and give them an opportunity to come back. Because my goal would be to take all 25 of them, right? You know,
right,
so I want to put that out in the atmosphere. But thinking about those ways, like I said, thinking about those ways that you can shift those things, you know, and I used to be completely anti-open door programs. Oh, no, you can't just let anyone in. But that's all part of that energy, that structure that we have learned in dance that is very Eurocentric in nature, that it's exclusion. It's exclusion. We exclude people. And we don't, but the foundations of dance in terms of the African and African American community is inclusion. Everybody gets to be a part. That's the reason why we dance in a circle, right?
Exactly.
That there's no leader. Exactly. There's no point. There's no point person. There's no one in front in the circle, and that the circle and the circle is part of the stuff that's going on the inside of the circle, right? But yeah. So how do we create an environment in dance that is inclusive?
Yeah, I want to say this so that our listeners, because I'm sure there are people listening to this going, but I want to see what our kids look like. By the way, her kids are insanely talented. We are not talking about like, oh, well then her program, obviously the kids must not be good. These are kids who go on to universities consistently. So realistically, it can happen. It's really the work that we are doing. So
it's the work that we're doing and how you define what talent is. I want to push back on that as well is how do you define talent? Because for me, if a kid graduates from my program and they can create their own work, talk about the work, talk about their creative process, if they can look at dance and analyze it in a way and pull out all the parts of it, and they're able to do complex movement patterns, then for me, that kid is talent. Now for you, talent might mean a 6 o'clock extension, right?
Right.
And it might mean feet that point all the way back to your butt. Like, I don't know, but I think we need to redefine. I think we need to redefine what talent is, because for me, I have several kids that leave, and you know, in the ballet world, somebody might go, "Oh, they're not very good," but can create work like you've never seen. And
exactly.
So, is that talent? Yeah, it is. It is talent,
right?
Because dance is just like math. Some people are physicists, right? You know,
right.
Some people it just is. You know, some people use those math skills to be chemists. Some people use those math skills to study physics. Some people use those math skills to, there's lots of directions to go in dance, but for us, we feel like what defines a dancer is this
visual.
Yeah, the visual, right? But
yeah,
there's a lot of other pieces in that, right?
Right.
Yeah,
and
I mean, I guess if you're listening to that, yeah, I mean, go Google us. I mean, and you're going to see a lot of students of color in varying degrees of their growth in dance, because hello, everybody, they're 14, 15, 16, 17 years old. And if you think that that is the end place of dance, I'm going to push back and tell you that I'm still growing as a dancer. Still,
exactly.
At 48 years old, I'm still growing as a dancer. So if you're going to define a kid's talent at 17 years old, I'm going to say you're part of the problem.
Exactly.
So what happens when you get to 50 minutes in an episode and you realize you have so much more to go? You decide, we got to have a part two. We'll be back with Nicole in the next few weeks to discuss ways in which we can make our dance classrooms more inclusive for all students.
If my leg goes up in a brown tight, in an arabesque, what difference does it make? If my hair is short and curly and I have a headband on, or if it's all pulled back in the bun, does this thing change the art form? And somebody might say, yes, it does, because we're all supposed to look the same. But boo, look around at the world. We are not the same. We're not the same. We don't all look the same.
Thanks for listening to The Engaged Core. Be sure to visit theengagedcore.buzzsprout.com to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover other fantastic bonus content. Oh, and most importantly, this show would not be possible without our fabulous listeners. So if you like the show, be sure to subscribe and share with your friends, plus leave us a 5-star review. Until next time.